This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to extend a special welcome to all of our listeners throughout North America joining us this evening on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides support for so many riders who have suffered on-track life-altering injuries. Please show your support. Visit pdjf.org for more information. I am very excited about tonight's guest, the winner of 3 consecutive Eclipse Awards for Outstanding Jockey, 3 Breeders' Cup victories to his name, recipient of the 2012 George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award, and this year he will be inducted into the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame with 4,985 wins. His mounts have earned over $191 million in earnings. It is an honor to introduce to you Ramon Dominguez. Ramon, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Ramon, it is such a pleasure to have you here today, and I know you're very busy, so we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us here.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, Ramon, I have to say, this show is roughly an hour in length, and I know already we are going to need much more time to go over everything you've accomplished. Ramon, my printer is all out of ink after printing out your very long list of graded stakes victories. Wow. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to look and see everything you've accomplished during your career. And we will discuss those victories later on the show, but how we usually begin the shows, I would love to know, how did you get your start into horse racing?
Sure. My beginning in horse racing is actually a very interesting story because I fell in love with the sport since I was a kid. I was probably like 13 years old, and I watched my first live race, and I knew from that moment that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. And when my dad found out that that's what I wanted to do, he was not too happy about it, and he decided to enroll me into a show jumping school that was not too far from my home, and I did that for a year, and it was a great education for me. But then I found out that there was a training center for racehorses close by. And, of course, I decided to start going there. And he found out, and he was very supportive. And that was my beginnings into the racing world. Then at the time in Venezuela, where I'm from, there was no riding school. So I was forced to move away like 6 hours from home. And I was living in a tack room. And it was absolutely crazy looking back. I mean, there was no bathrooms. I was sleeping in the floor next to the tack room. And this is something that I haven't really shared with people before. I didn't feel like it was important. But now, in retrospect, I feel like people will find humor, if anything, on this. The only window to the tack room, there was a pit outside. So that place was extremely stinky, and that's where I lived, yes. And I was there for 7 months. I rode some races. I never won a race. And then I found out that there was a promotion in one of the big tracks, and I was able to get it, to get accepted. And that was my beginning in professionally riding in Venezuela. And I rode there for a year and a half, and then I came to the U.S.
Wow, Ramon, living in a tag room next to the pigs, and then look at where you know, you've come so far, my goodness. And so you started riding, is that at La Rinconada? I don't know how
That's
to pronounce
correct.
It.
Yep. you pronounce it right. That's okay. La Rinconada, yep.
Fantastic. And how was it transferring over to there and riding with the big boys, I suppose, for the first time?
Well, it was... Of course, I was riding with experienced riders, and I came to realize I didn't know anything. I barely knew how to get on a horse, but they were very supportive, and to me, it was a great journey, a great learning curve, and it didn't take me long to really learn the basics, and when I felt like I knew quite a bit because I had already been riding for a year and a half, then I came to the U.S., and again, I had to go through that. Oh, shoot, I don't really know much because these are the big leagues of racing. But the whole process is something that instead of feeling like, oh, my gosh, I just don't know, I really looked at it excited because I knew that there was a lot that I could learn. And, I enjoyed the process of learning every single thing that I was learning every day. I enjoyed the journey.
Is that why you decided to move to the United States, away from your family and everything you knew? Is that why, to learn more?
You know, since I started riding in Venezuela, and from day one, this is something that I was very focused. I knew this is what I wanted to proceed for the rest of my life. And right away, the United States is something that was a goal. Because, like in any sport, horse racing, of course, is in the U.S., these are the big leagues, and any other country will really follow horse racing from the United States. And just coming here to ride, that was a huge accomplishment to me. So being here, of course, that came with a big set of challenges. But at the same time, I was happy to be here and learning. And once that I came here, this became home, and I really never went back.
Wow. That had to be a bit of a culture shock, though. Was it a tough transition moving to the United States?
Yes, it was. But it was also something that I was able to adapt fairly quick because I love the system here. I love everything that the U.S. had to offer, especially I came to Miami, and I felt like I was home. Everybody spoke Spanish, and... So it wasn't that big of a adapting for me. And I tell you what, the biggest thing that I had to go through, and actually it's one of the biggest things that I had to encounter in my life, it was going away from my family. I come from a family where we're extremely tight. So although we communicated often over the phone, it wasn't the same. So that's something that it did take quite a while for me to get used to.
Of course. Are you able to visit your family very often? Do they come here?
I am very fortunate that they every year they come once and they stay here for at least a month. So when I was riding, it was difficult for me to go for the obvious reasons that there is never really a good time to take off.
Of course.
Now that my time is more flexible, unfortunately, because of the situation in Venezuela, things are a little bit rocky, and I have not been in Venezuela in quite a while. But again, my family, at least they come and visit.
Oh, well, that's very good, Ramon. And describe the differences in the riding styles, Venezuela versus the United States, the riding styles between the difference of the two.
Sure. And there is Venezuela... It is a great place where many good jockeys have come out of. The horse racing is something that people really respect the sport, and those who are involved are heavily invested. You know, whether it is a jockey or trainer, everybody takes pride. So there is a great system. Now, it is difficult for me to be fair and establish a comparison between racing there and racing here, because I came here when I was still very young and very green. I didn't know much. But one of the things that come to mind that I was quickly able to learn here, it was, for example, horses switching leads. I remember watching races in the jockey's room in Venezuela prior to riding, and the experienced rider will watch a horse going two turns, and whenever the horse switch leads, turning for home, they'll say, oh, that horse is beat. He switch leads, he's not going to win. So actually, horses will run on one lead all the way around, and that was okay. That was what was expected. So that's something that I quickly realized here, that that's not the best way. In fact, horses need to switch leads. So that's one of the things that come to mind that are pretty defined differences between there and here.
Wow, that is very interesting, Ramon. As a rider, former rider myself, that's odd to me to think that anywhere else they would want a horse to stay on one lead most of the way around the track. That's very interesting, and I'm sure that was something that you had to adjust to, of course. Was there anything else regarding your riding style that you had to tweak?
Yes, and my riding style, I mean, up until the day I retired, was always learning and always trying to do things differently. And because I really learned prior to going to the bush track or the C track where I ultimately started riding, I learned on a farm on my own, and therefore my style was always very different. And in many ways, I wish I could look different. My style was a little more defined. I could be lower on a horse, but as the saying goes, it's hard to teach an old dog a new trick. So it was hard for me to really reinvent myself after so many years. But at the same time, I feel like there were other things that I learned just because of my own mistakes and learning from my experiences that actually became an asset to my riding. And one of them was really the ability to listen to the horses. So I, for many years, used the riding crop quite often. And then the last 10 years or so, I took pride on the ability to really use the riding crop. Because I was really able to connect with the horse at a very high level and basically know exactly what they wanted, and vice versa, they will know what I wanted from them as well. So that's something that was fascinating, and one of the things that I miss the most about riding.
It's funny you mentioned that, Ramon. I remember during my own career watching you, and I always admired the fact that you never relied on the riding crop as your only tool to get run out of a horse. You got so much run out of a horse, just your hands. I mean, it was really incredible to watch. And so that's funny that you mentioned that, because I always remember thinking, watching you and thinking that and admiring that about your own riding style. And Ramon, did you have any mentors when you first moved here to the U.S. and you were still adjusting to the change? Did you have any mentors in the jocks room that took you aside, kind of showed you the ropes?
Yeah, well, you know, from day one, I always look at every rider, regardless if it's a new rider or a guy who has ridden for 20, 30 years, and I pay close attention and really try to see what I like about what they do, and I will ask all the time, and I'm sure that I was considered to be a pain in the neck in the jockey's room, because I was always asking questions and how do you do this and how do you do that. So the answer to your question is that everybody was a mentor, and it's something that unfortunately I feel like there has been a little bit of a drift in some of the professional, the more experienced riders, and I had this conversation often that a lot of times the new riders fail to ask questions. And in fact, when an experienced rider will come to them trying to point out something that they can improve, there are many cases where there is an attitude. So it is great to see some of the young riders, like, for example, the Ortizes, who I had the pleasure to ride with, that they were very focused in all the time asking questions. How do you do this and how do you do that? Very hard on themselves, which is actually a good thing. So and that's basically how it was. Now, one guy that really went out of his way to help me when I first came to Florida, and I barely knew how to speak English at the time, it was Randy Romero. I wasn't even winning that many races, but he was paying close attention to me, and he actually one day invited me out to eat, and he was the first person that I had sushi with. He invited me to have sushi, and he really took me under his wing, and he started teaching me and giving me advices. And I remember one day I stopped and I asked him, Randy, why are you doing this for me? And he paused and he said to me, Ramon, one day you're going to be in the position to help other jockeys. There is no doubt in my mind that you're going to succeed. So the only thing that I want you to do is do the same thing, help others. So he was, and still is, a great friend, and he really helped me a lot.
Wow, what a great story, Ramon. Randy Romero, we've had here on the show as well, and just an outstanding person, and that's what a great story. And jockey Ramon Dominguez here joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ramon, you rode your first winner at Hialeah in March of 96. How was it riding there at Hialeah? I heard that back in the day it was just a beautiful place to ride.
That track was and still is one of the most beautiful racetracks that I have ridden. I remember coming out of the jockey's room and looking at the paddock and actually the grandstand. It was an absolutely amazing place where people will come and actually get their pictures taken, and weddings will take place right out of the grandstand because how beautiful and magnificent it was. And the track, to me, it was a cultural shock when I came there. Although in Venezuela, the racetrack where I rode, it is an absolutely beautiful track too. It's in a valley and it's really incredible, the view. Hialeah, the history behind and the actual structure, it was something that I really had to pinch myself. It was that beautiful. And for me also, riding for the first time on the turf course, it was a different experience and something that I really enjoy a lot.
Wow, that's fantastic, Ramon. And where did you go from there? Following Hialeah, where did you go?
Well, in Hialeah, my agent at the time was in good terms, so he was very well connected with Fran Passero, rest in peace, and he was winning all the races, and he offered for us to come to Delaware Park. And that was actually 2 years later. I'm sorry, I'm jumping the gun here. From Hialeah, I went to Calder and Gulfstream, and that was in 96. And in 98, I was riding in Hialeah, and I started doing well. I was like third in the standings. I was extremely excited. I was the best that I had ever done. And, of course, I didn't have any plans of moving. So, again, my agent with Frank Passero said, why don't you guys go to Delaware? And I said, no way. I do not want to go to Delaware. Let's stay here. Hmm. And he basically told me, Ramon, we need to take a shot. This is a place where racing is very good. And so I decided against my will, we went to Delaware. And that was the track where I really was kind of a turning point for me. I met my wife for once, but also I received a lot of support, and in a matter of a couple of years, I started doing very, very well there.
Wow. Who was your agent at the time, Ramon, who convinced you to go to Delaware?
Yeah, my agent, his name is Steve Paras, P-A-R-A-S, and he's still an agent, I believe, in Charlestown. And yes, if it wasn't for him, I would not have gone to Delaware because, again, I was doing well in Hialeah, and yeah. So we worked together for roughly 3 or 4 years. And then later on, I started working with Steve Roshan, the agent that I have for 13 years.
Of course, of course. And obviously the move to Delaware, Ramon, was meant to be. You were the leading rider at Delaware from 2004 to 2007. And like you mentioned, you met your wife, Sharon, there at Delaware. Tell us how you met her.
Well, Sharon had just come out of college with a degree in advertisement and graphic design. But like any of us crazy people, she found out that she could get paid to exercise racehorses. And she comes from a racing background. Her dad actually still trains stand-up breeds. So she started galloping racehorses. And I will never forget the first time I saw her. I walked into a barn and she was walking a horse. And I said, oh, my gosh, that girl is beautiful. And my agent at the time said to me, basically, Ramon, she's out of your league, so don't even think about it. And we became friends, and we were always talking. And before you knew, we were going out, and the rest is history. And she is an amazing woman. I am so, so blessed to be married to her. And, yeah, and it seems crazy that it has already been 15 years since we met.
Wow, what a great story, Ramon. And you do have two young boys as well.
That's correct, yeah. Matthew, the youngest one, will be 10, God willing, in July. And Alex is 11 and a half.
Wow. Future jockeys, Ramon?
You know what? I wouldn't discourage them, but they actually, last week when we went to the Preakness, were Sharon's mom farm, and they went horseback riding, and they go and they can't wait to get off their horse to play with their toys. So at this point, they don't really show any interest, but if that's the direction they will want to go in the future, I'll be happy to support them.
Wow, that's too funny. That's too funny. And Ramon, of course, as I mentioned, you did so well there at Delaware Park, and your career really took off in 2004, when you won the Breeders' Cup Turf aboard Better Talk Now. Tell us about that horse.
Yes, that was a horse that Grand Motion, one of my biggest supporters, decided to put me on Better Talk Now. And actually, the first time I rode him, I went to Louisiana, and the horse, I really let him get in the clear too early, and he made a quick move and he stopped. And I learned from that he needed to really be covered up, as they say, or be behind horses for a long time. And that was easier said than done at the time, because he was full of energy. But so that became the challenge, to always trying to finesse him and get him behind horses. And then soon after that, we really got along very well, and we communicated great, and I was able to just keep him behind horses, and the horse had a great turn of foot whenever he got clear, and we were able to do so, so well. I mean, winning the Breeders' Cup was an amazing experience for me, because not only the horse was not the favorite, but also the race had a lot of drama to it, because there was a claim of foul, and although I'm sure it didn't take too long, to me it seems like it was 5 hours waiting for the race to be official. But when it was all said and done, so rewarding. I couldn't sleep that night. My brother actually went with me to Texas that day. He came from Venezuela to visit and go to the races, so we were extremely excited.
Wow, Ramon. I watched that race here before we got on air, and I was going to ask you, what was going through your mind? You said it felt like 5 hours, because Better Talk Now, just coming out of the turn, just blows by everyone and drifts in a bit. And so that had to be definitely a nerve-wracking moment, I'm sure. But wow, what an experience that had to be.
It was, yeah. And honestly, like, I was so certain that I did not cross the line. Although the horse drifted slightly, also there was a combination that they were coming out. And so I was pretty sure that again, our horse didn't interfere with the other horses. But, of course, these calls really are out of our hands, and I was just really hoping for the best. And sure enough, when I saw his number off, I was celebrating right away.
You can take a deep breath and celebrate properly, Ramon. What a great story. And as I mentioned, that just really, your career took off from that point, and you're riding regularly at Delaware. You won your 3,000th race at Delaware Park on May 9th of 2007. Do you remember that day?
I sure do, yes. Very, very exciting because, honestly, after the race, I say, oh, my gosh, 3,000 is one of those things that you continue to accumulate victories. And, of course, every day you focus on different things because, you know, I ride X amount of horses today. I got to focus on each and every race. That you don't really stop and smell the roses, so to speak. You really, before you know, you, in many cases, you feel like at the blink of an eye, and you say, wow, I have won 3,000 races. But it was after the race that it kind of dawned on me, my God, 3,000, that's a big number.
It's a huge number, Ramon. Did you think, when you first got started, did you think you would win so many races? Did you think you would be so successful?
You know, people talk often about goals, and although I am goal-driven, or I always have a vision for what I want and what I want to accomplish, at the same time, because I focus on the moment, I focus on really accomplishing what I need to accomplish now, which is pretty much or the only thing that I can do, I didn't really set in the beginning like goals as to, oh, I want to win X amount of races. I was just doing the best I could in the moment, and of course, great things will come out of that. And so, but if going back to your question, did I think that I would win 2,000 or 3,000 races? No, I really wasn't aiming that high, or I didn't really have a number in mind. So even winning my first 1,000 race, I remember it was in Pimlico, and that was a huge deal to me. I said, my gosh, 1,000 races. So, but it was by fairly fast, or it seems to me like my career went by very fast, and all the accomplishment kind of happened overnight.
Just incredible story, Ramon. The numbers just kept going from there, and following Delaware Park, where did you go?
Well, when I started working with Steve Roshan, we went to Delaware Park, and then a year or 2 years later, we went back to Maryland, where we also had a lot of business. And I was for like roughly 10 years between Delaware and Maryland. And that was very good because it gave me the ability, if I had a horse or a big race in one of those tracks, is within driving distance. So that was home for me, Maryland and Delaware.
We'll be back with jockey Ramon Dominguez after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Alex Canciari started the Canterbury meet off hot with a great week, highlighted by stakes wins in the Lady Slipper and the 10,000 Lake Stakes. Canciari consistently finished in the money on 63% of his mounts and ended the week with 5 wins, 3 seconds, and 7 third-place finishes. Florent Giroux had a great weekend at Pimlico as he won the Hilltop and Sir Barton Stakes. Giroux won 32% and came in the money on 59% of his mounts, finishing the week with 7 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Jose Ortiz once again dominated the week at Belmont Park and increased his lead in the standings to an impressive 20 wins. For the week, Ortiz finished with 12 wins, 3 seconds, and 4 third-place finishes. Finally, the Jockey's Guild Jockey of the Week, Kent DeSormo, scored his third Preakness victory as he put on a veteran ride aboard Exaggerator. The Hall of Famer stayed tucked along the rail until angling out in the stretch, where he passed Nyquist to win by 3.5 lengths. With that victory, DeSormo has now won 21% and come in the money on 42% of his Preakness Stakes mounts. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is now available in a digital version formatted for your ebook reader, complete with live links to videos of key races featured in the text. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Top of the lane, and it's all hands on deck for Hanson now. He has to dig deep and find more, but he is Creative Cause now. Here's Union Rags, and look at him stride home in the center of the track. And Union Rags went wide throughout, but he's coming Creative Cause. Hanson is running an absolutely huge one on the inside. Hanson just keeps on going. Union Rags is shifting to the outside. Creative Cause is third. Hanson keeps going. Union Rags, Hanson, and Union Rags. Hanson, the more they asked, the more he gave, and Hanson, what a thriller! Hanson to Union Rags, a little unlucky, he shifted ground. Creative Cause was right there in third, ran a huge one, and Take Charge Indy finished up fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigle, joined tonight by Ramon Dominguez. Ramon, of course, that was the replay of the 2011 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Victory aboard Hanson, and we'll get to that later on down the road. But before we went to the break, you were discussing how you rode regularly at the Delaware, Maryland, Mid-Atlantic Circuit, and I'm familiar with that circuit as well. I rode there most of my career, and great opportunities there, given the fact that there are so many racetracks within driving distance, as you mentioned. But at some point, you decided to hit the New York circuit. And why did you come to that decision?
Yes, and it was great that Steve Rochin, my agent, and I had such a wonderful, still do, a relationship. And we were always on the same page. And it was actually scary because whenever we sat down to talk about something that was very important, we could finish each other's sentence. I mean, we really knew exactly the direction we need to be moving. So for quite a few years prior to going to New York, we started receiving, you know, opportunities. So some of the trainers and owners would say, why don't you guys come to New York? So even at that point, I would say like 5 years before, there was always the desire for people for us to also come to New York, and also the offers from people for us to come. Having said that, we didn't feel like it was the right time for us yet. In one hand, our families were in Maryland and Delaware, but when we put even our families to the side and focus on the profession, we felt like there was still a little more that we needed to do as far as have a better foundation prior to making this big move. And we decided to come to New York for at least 5 years in the during the winter. And a few times we actually went to Saratoga as well. And the winter time at Aquado is where we started really creating a great business, and people were supporting us in an amazing way. And it got to the point where it wasn't really any longer our decision to stay in Maryland or Delaware. We had to be in New York. and there was not even much of a conversation. We knew that we had to come, and we made that transition, and it was very smooth. And the rest was history. I mean, from there on, we stayed in New York.
That, Ramon, was also obviously a very good decision, because beginning in 2008, 2009 at Aqueduct, you won nine consecutive leading rider titles. That is quite an accomplishment.
Thank you. Yeah, we were so fortunate to, actually recently somebody asked me, someone who is not too familiar with the industry, who do you ride for when you wrote? And I said, listen, I was so fortunate that we wrote for pretty much everybody. And, I mean, you have top trainers that have their number one jockey that they ride for pretty much all their horses. And that is a big deal for the jockey. At the same time, for me, I feel like it was even greater the fact that I rode pretty much for everybody, had a great relationship with everyone, and still do. So that had to do as well with that coming to New York or time in the winter and just establishing those great relationships.
Ramon, you also mentioned riding at Saratoga, and what was it like riding there for the first time? One of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, Saratoga is really on a league of its own, because even if you ride in New York at Aqueduct and Belmont, which is great racing, when we go to Saratoga, I always found it very interesting how a horse that will be a heavy favorite in a condition, a Belmont or Aqueduct, and you go to Saratoga, and it might not be on the top three choices. So you have also people coming from Kentucky and other places, but also people will be really saving their horses for these races. So it is the cream of the cream. I mean, these are the best races, and everybody, because the meet is so short, there is such a high importance on really one race or one win can separate someone from, you know, finishing second or third in the standings. So everything counts, and there is a high focus from everyone, and it's the best racing period.
Absolutely. Ramon, I got to tell a story here, because one of my greatest memories was when I was still a 5-pound bug, I think, and I shipped up to Saratoga with a very nice turf horse, a filly by the name of PJ's Little Tony. We shipped up from Suffolk Downs to ride in an allowance race, I think it was, on the turf there at Saratoga. And I remember breaking out of the 8-hole. We took the lead, set a pretty decent pace most of the way around there. And we're in front, turning for home. We're in front, and we're 15-1. And that was the only time in my life where I could hear the crowd screaming my name. It was the coolest experience ever. And Ramon, I got to say, who nails me on the wire? Ramon Dominguez. And that was the greatest memory of my life, and the worst memory maybe at the same time. But I will never forget that. I thought we were home free, and you nailed us. You nailed us. I don't know if you remember that, but I will never forget that moment. I know that for sure. But yeah, that's why I bring up Saratoga, and that's just one of my favorite memories personally. But talk about going to New York, and again, your just career just goes off to a completely different level. You just take off. And in 2010, you begin riding a horse by the name of Gioponti. Tell us about that horse.
Yeah, Gioponti was such a cool horse. I mean, first, he was absolutely beautiful to look at. His composition seems perfect, and an extremely gentle horse to ride as well. As most horses for Chris Ocumon, he was very well behaved, and you could keep him behind horses, and when it was time to go, he will be there for you. And we had so many great memories, great victories, winning so many good races, and then winning the Arlington Million. I mean, if you name it, the horse was just a very consistent and very cool horse.
That is fantastic. Of course, you rode him in the 2009 Breeders' Cup Classic to finish second behind Zenyatta. Do you remember that race?
Do I remember that race? Oh, my gosh. I have nightmares about that race. Yes. That was a great race. We had an absolutely perfect, amazing trip. And honestly, I was counting the money. I said, well, we are home. I was able to, you know, split horses. So within the last 16 or 18 miles, and he made the lead. But there comes a filly called Zenyatta, and she got us. But it was very bittersweet. Of course, I was disappointed right away because I was thinking that I was going to win. But afterwards, I was still very proud of his performance because he always ran a great race, and Zenyatta just happy to be Zenyatta that day. But I certainly remember that day.
Wow. And Gio Ponti, of course, an Eclipse Award winner. He took you to the winner's circle many times following that second place finish behind Zenyatta, however. Ramon won the Man of War Stakes, Shadwell Turf Mile. I mean, he just, what a racehorse. I mean, that's, what an opportunity to ride a horse like that. That's fantastic. And, of course, on the right along the lines of Eclipse Award winner, well, 2010, you won your first of three consecutive Eclipse Award for Outstanding Jockey. Do you remember that first one? Do you remember standing up there and accepting that award?
I do remember. I was terrified. I remember before they called my name, like, oh, my gosh, I hope I don't pass out and I have to say a few words. But it was great. It's really what we work for every day. And even if the person doesn't have as a goal to really win an Eclipse Award, it is such a high honor because it's really a symbol of this, an example of all of your actions and all your efforts and everything that you have done. So that was big. That was great for me.
Of course. And it also had to be a really great feeling to win the 2012 George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award, because that award you're voted on by your peers, your fellow jockeys. And that had to be, what an honor. That's a great experience.
Yes, that's definitely one of the top awards that I ever got, and that's got to be the top for any rider for the reason that you just pointed out, that it is voted for from your fellow riders, and not only on your what you accomplish on the track, but also outside the racetrack. So that's something that is a great honor.
Jockey Ramon Dominguez joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And of course, Ramon, during the break, we had the replay of the 2011 victory in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile aboard Hanson. Tell us about riding Hanson.
Yeah, Hanson was a very cool horse to ride, and he very high energy. And going into the Breeders' Cup, that was my primary focus, or that I wanted him to relax as much as he could. His running style was, he wanted to be on the front end, and that was okay, but I just didn't want him to go any faster than he had to. And I felt like he was able to relax to some extent. Having said that, the fractions were still fairly quick, and turning for home, it was one of those things that you are really hoping for the best. And at the same time, I didn't know exactly what to expect. And when I started getting after him and trying to encourage him, he showed another gear. He showed that he still had it. And I said, this is wonderful. This is a great horse. And the heavy favorite with Javier was coming strong. And it was going to be fairly close, and sure enough, Hanson still had his neck in front, and very, very rewarding winning that race. And I was just very happy because him and I had teamed up many times prior to that, and so that was kind of a icing on the cake, because we have won some good races, but of course the British Cup is another in another league.
Of course, Ramon. And then the following year, you won the Breeders' Cup Turf aboard Little Mike. Tell us about Little Mike and his running style.
Sure. Little Mike, that was a great race because his running style was also a front runner. He was proven to be best in the front end. In that race, I came to the park and they'll, you know, say, Ramon, if we can be in front, great. But otherwise, just best judgment. And the horse broke well, but the front position was taken. So we had to settle for second and third. And he also relaxed beautifully. And sometimes the only thing with that is that if the horse has just one running style, even if they relax, they don't necessarily have to be able to finish up. So I was just biding my time and waiting, because, of course, the distance was also a little bit of a question going on and a half. And turning for home, it was time to go, and the horse was there for me. He took off, and what an exciting race. To have won that race, it was great because, again, not only the distance that was the question, but also the first time the horse really not being in front, coming from a little off the pace, was also another question. And but the horse just proved that he was a runner, and we were extremely excited, Dale and Carlo and myself.
Wow, Ramon. And you describe these horses' running style. Hanson liked to be on the front end. Little Mike had to settle for sitting off just the pace. But obviously, as riders, we don't like to be pigeonholed as just a speed rider or just a closing rider. But if you could just tell us, what was your preference, though? Obviously, you could win aboard anything. But if you could choose, would you choose a horse that liked to be on the front end, or would you choose the strategy involved with coming from off the pace?
Yeah, either case, it has their pros and cons. Of course, if you go to the lead with a horse that is fast and you're able, the horse relaxes, that is a beautiful thing. You don't have to be strategizing as to how you're going to maneuver through traffic. On the other hand, when you have a closer that, despite the pace, he's able to adapt. If they're going slow, he's able to be close up, or if they're going too fast, he doesn't mind being behind. It is also a great thing because at that point, he doesn't have to. I'm not the one who is giving the input. I'm not the one who is deciding exactly where the horse is going to be. It's one of those things where I can almost like close my eyes and really allow the horse to relax and be where he needs to be, regardless of the pace. And maybe the person from the outside watching say, oh my God, he's too far back or he's too close. But if you are that in the moment and that connected with the horse, there is no better feeling than that, because turning for home, you know that horse will be flying. Of course, you are at the mercy of the pace, or you are at the mercy of what the other horses are doing, as far as if you have a horse that maybe is better than your horse, but your horse will be giving you its best. So again, it depends what horse I have. I did probably my best coming from off the pace, and it wasn't necessarily by design. It was because the ability to listen to the horses again and just letting them be where they need to be.
Ramon, you described that so well, being in the zone, being one with the horse, and I get chills thinking about it, just remembering moments in my own career being that connected to a horse. You described it perfectly, Ramon. And jockey Ramon Dominguez joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, Ramon, this past weekend I saw on Facebook you were there at Pimlico watching Exaggerator beat the favorite Nyquist, who of course won the Derby this year. And you yourself rode in the Preakness to a second place finish twice, once in 2005 with Scrappy T, which was an interesting race. Tell us about what happened with Scrappy T.
You know, I laugh because it doesn't matter what I'm being interviewed about or what one day I was signing some autographs in Tampa for the PDAS, and out of all people, there was just one kid that came to me and said, "Sir, do you remember a horse called Scrappy T?" I sure do. So this is one that can never escape me. But yes, Scrappy T was that was a race that I was so glad afterwards that it didn't end up being worse than it could have been. Scrappy T, a horse that had a lot of ability, and he could have focused better. Sometimes that was his challenge was about focusing. And turning for home, that is a day where thousands of people there. The crowd is extremely loud. I don't know exactly what got his attention, but I hit him left-handed, and this horse was just idling and just took off to the outside. Unfortunately, Fleet Alex, the horse who ended up winning the race, was right behind me, and thank God that the horse didn't fall. And so I felt very blessed that I didn't fall either because the horse made that right-hand turn that severe. But also when I took a peek back, that Jeremy Rose, who was riding Fleet Alex, stayed on. And more importantly, that he was able to recoup and win the race as he was supposed to. So I still do that he's one of those things that you cannot predict. There was nothing, if I had to do it again, that I could have foreseen prior to the horse doing what he did. So I was just happy that the outcome was what it was, and happy to finish second. So, of course, that always opens to a debate, people criticizing this and that. But the bottom line is that I feel like I did what I needed to do, and I'm happy with the outcome.
Exactly, Ramon. These 1,200-pound animals have minds of their own, and we don't always know what they're going to do, but quite the accomplishment just to stay on. And, of course, Jeremy Rose aboard Fleet Alex as well. And, that was quite the race, I am sure. But you mentioned you were signing hats for the PDJF. And, of course, part of the proceeds from the show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. What a wonderful thing they do. And tell us a little bit about the work you do with the PDJF.
Yes, the PDJF is an organization that is very close to my heart. Although I'm not a recipient from the PDJF, I do try to, as well as my wife, contribute and help as much as we can, not only to raise funds and bring revenue to help these riders, but also equally important to raise awareness within the industry and outside the industry about the needs of these jockeys who unfortunately pay the ultimate price while doing their job. And yes, I believe that currently there are 68 jockeys who have been permanently disabled while riding. And this is something that there is always a need to do more for them. There is a need to, because the PDJF is a non-profit organization and all they get comes from donations. So it depends entirely in donation from people who love the sport and people who understand what the jockeys do and what they have gone through after unfortunately having these catastrophic injuries. So it's something that I'm very excited and passionate about contributing and helping in any way I can.
And of course, Ramon, you know what it's like to be forced into retirement. Unfortunately, you suffered a horrible spill at Aqueduct on January 18th, 2013. And we only have a couple minutes left here on the show, but describe what happened that day and the transition, how difficult that must be to be forced to retire.
Sure. What happened that day, honestly, I got to rely only on what I heard and what I see on the replay. My horse looks like maybe had clipped heels and fell off, and I had multiple skull fractures on my face, and I had a severe traumatic brain injury, and that forced me to retire. So, yes, it was difficult at first because, if anything, although it is my profession, it's really not me. You can help to really be identified with what you do. And so you have to kind of go through the grieving period, as I call it. And but looking back, it's something that is not entirely bad. It's something that, first, you cannot avoid, but second, it's really something that is, it can be or should be beneficial. You need to go through this. So coming to terms with not writing anymore, again, it was difficult, but I am extremely happy about what is happening in the present, what I'm working on for the future. And life is good, so no regret. And I look back with the best and greatest memories. And I still have amazing friendships that I had created within the racing industry that they will last for a lifetime. So I'm proud to be part of the horse racing community.
So blessed, Ramon, that you're alive and well after such a catastrophic injury, and you're doing so well. And of course, it was just announced in April that you will be inducted into the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. Wow, what an honor. That is just, that has to be an amazing feeling, Ramon.
Wow, that was something that hard to describe when I received the call. I cried, and it was overwhelmingly nice to know, to be recognized, and to, again, in a split second, your whole career kind of goes in front of your eyes, and nothing but great memories. So what a great honor, and beautiful to really be, again, recognized. And I can't wait to August 12th to be in the ceremony.
August 12th, we'll be here before you know it, Ramon. We are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, Ramon.
It's been a pleasure as well to speak with you, and hope everyone enjoy our conversation. And yes, look forward to being in Saratoga this summer.
Wish you all the best, Ramon. Thank you so much. Now, folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. On our website, you will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out, horseracingradio.net. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.